Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Tanya Hathaway with Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told on Marty Oakley's TS Radio Network and Stephen Burke's KLRB 89.9 FM Lighthouse Christian Radio out of Stuart, Oklahoma. Thank you very much for tuning in. We greatly appreciate your time, your support, your curiosity, your understanding, your empathy, your activity, your action, your advocacy, your activism, to all of you and whatever categories you fall in that are listening to us tonight. We greatly appreciate your time, your effort, your heart. And even if you're a little bit skeptic, have some skepticism over some of these shows, hopefully, you know, we're here to clarify those issues with you, and we're here to, you know, give a voice to those that have not had voices, that have lent them enough of a voice to have justice served to them. So we have a very special guest on once again tonight. And I'll introduce Kathy Campbell in a few minutes, but she was on the show just last about 5 months ago, and it was following the inaugural wrongful conviction rally March 14th over there in Oklahoma City, where we had a nice group of people very passionate about sharing their stories, listening to stories, and covered by that Fox station and a local paper in Edmond, as well as others, where we had some great speakers with heart-wrenching stories. We all have heard of the Holtzclaw case, of course, the Daniel Holtzclaw case, where, and if you haven't, I encourage you to look up on Facebook. Daniel Holtzclaw is innocent, or free Daniel Holtzclaw. And I'll tell you guys about a little fundraiser going on for that family shortly as well. Richard Glossop case. Richard Glossop is innocent. He has been on death row for many years in Oklahoma. And those are the high profile names that are coming right off the tip of my tongue. Of course, you've heard about the Robert Grisham, the innocent man. Boy, oh boy, it's a shame that Oklahoma has to be so popular for these heinous public corruption crimes. Why am I calling it public corruption? Well, because we do know some accidents happen, that not everybody is perfect. We do know that there is a certain room for error in these things, and that, you know, there are small percentages of people that are wrongfully convicted that where there is no malice. And hopefully, God so willing, that there will be times for those that have not yet been exonerated will be exonerated, given the increased scientific data, the DNA, and the, you know, being able to go back and prove what they could not prove before. But when I'm speaking about public corruption, this is when there are facts, where there are is DNA that should be able to be brought forward, or where there has been where there's been like, for instance, in the Straw That Broke case, the Shriver brothers, what Kathy Campbell is here to talk about tonight, where there's a truck that is evidence that is involved in, allegedly involved in a crime scene, and to be found out that they really weren't, where that whole truck has been destroyed. That whole truck has been destroyed, where there's exculpatory evidence that was not presented, exculpatory evidence being that there was evidence for the defense, that the defense should have been made aware of, that, you know, prosecutors don't like to give up. But guess what? This is all about due process. It's all about your rights, okay? So let's just talk a little bit about our rights. Okay. First of all, we're all here, and nobody is better than the other person. Nobody should be allowed immunity, and it says so in our Bill of Rights. Okay, so let's take a look at it. The right to petition government for redress of grievances is a right to make a complaint or seek the assistance of one's government without fear of punishment or reprisals ensured by the First Amendment of the United States. Well, my goodness, how many times have you heard about the revenge for trying to make wrongs right, for repercussions, trying to make wrongs right? For those that are the good attorneys out there that are actually want to stand up for what is right, well, suddenly they lose their licenses or their lives are threatened. You know, and that's why we have so many bad actors out there, because unfortunately many of them will turn their backs now. They're out in front of the same judges day in and day out. And there's plenty of ex parte communications that are going on. This doesn't happen every day, everywhere. But where it lives, let me tell you, it's fungus. And it is hurting so many lives. So forgive me here. I'm just looking at some of my notes. I'm so excited to have Kathy on. And this whole thing is very bittersweet, of course, because there's no reason there should be even subjects for such thing. But we've got the Fifth Amendment, okay? We've got the federal government that no one should be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Without due process of law, people, this is indeed not just a federal obligation. It's also an obligation to all states, okay? So there's no constitution in any state that can – you know, we have our federal constitution, and then the states have their own constitution. That being said, you cannot pervert the federal constitution in the making or the amending of your own state constitution. So if there's any perversion of the true meaning of the federal constitution, then it needs to be null and void. And we need to be able to redress the grievances. We need to be able to look to those that are in place to stand up for us, to do work for us. Okay? And it makes me absolutely sick. I can't tell you how many times I have heard, well, when you contact the Attorney General's office, well, they work for the prosecutors. They work for the state. Excuse me. Excuse me, they're supposed to oversee. They are the highest legal office agency in that state. They're supposed to oversee. They're supposed to help. They're supposed to take a paddle to the butts of the bad prosecutors if they're being bad. You know, they are supposed to also, of course, praise for the good, you know, see to it that the goods are being noticed. Yes, of course, that's fine. But these people work for you guys out there, for us, for we, me, us, we, the people. They are the public servants that took an oath of office, and they are bound to an even higher standard because they took that oath of office. And that higher standard is to us, we the people. It is not to each other. It is not to create and enforce conflicts of interest of, you know, the bar overseeing lawyers, of the judges overseeing judges. We have issues here. And then when you cannot get through to your representatives, we have issues here. Well, people, thank you so much once again for listening to me rant about why we are here and, you know, wanting to share with you when things go right and how we're going to make things go right, but also allowing others to listen to what's going on here and why you too need to speak up, because we must be in union. Okay, we must be in union. So Marty Oakley, thank you so much for this platform on the very popular TS Radio. And Marty, again, has done a fantastic job at the Whistleblower Summit of this last month. And you need to tune in and listen to as many of Marty's shows as you possibly can. And whatever shows that you want to see or you want to see that are available, look up ppjg.me and you'll see all of her hosts. You can look at the archives. You can get special notices when who's on what and where. And go ahead and share this with your friends. Share this with people who aren't your friends but you think might be interested. All right. I'm not a lawyer. I am an advocate. I am a show host and a public speaker. And I am here vetting people that come on this show. 99.9% do a pretty darn good job doing that. And anytime that there's a mistake made, I want you to call me out and we'll make it right. But again, TS Radio, Marty Oakley, and Stephen Burke, KLRB, and myself personally and professionally, and any rebroadcast cannot be held liable for any content and information that is shared on this radio station, on this podcast and radio broadcast. I also want to share, I'm about ready to bring you on, Kathy. I would like to share on behalf of the Holt Squaws that they are having a fundraiser, and I just took a screenshot of it so that I could share it. For anybody who's in Oklahoma, and you don't even have to be in Oklahoma to, if you want to participate in this. It's Shandy Lane, Stacey Sanders in concert, Under the Stars, Saturday, September 21st, 2009 at 7 p.m. And I'm trying to see exactly where this is taking place. It doesn't say. East of 30th Street in Enid. Okay. Enid, Oklahoma. East of 30th Street in Enid, Oklahoma. You bring your own chair, ice chest, blanket, cash, food available for purchase. There's a silent auction. There's a 50-50 drawing. If you get those tickets in advance, they're $10, $15 at the gate. To purchase the tickets, you can call Kay at 580-548-4673 or Blair at 405-414-7097. And I have been advised that you don't have to be there to purchase tickets and have an opportunity to win that 50-50. If you win it and you want to give it back to the Holt Squaw Defense Funds, you can, or you can just keep the cash for yourself. So look up the Daniel Holt Squaw case and learn about that. We need to have this collaborative effort, people, to help each other. Without further ado, Kathy Campbell, thank you so much for your patience, letting me get all that off my chest. And I want to wish you and your husband a happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you.
I saw it's your anniversary today. How many years?
Thank you. 29 years. Wow. And I know it's pretty amazing. We had a great weekend, and I've been so looking forward to coming on the show with you, and just want you to know how much I appreciate, my family appreciates us being able to come on here and talk and share our story, because honestly, before I met you at the rally, I didn't know that people like you and organizations like you existed. And you just, you know, you're just lost out there. And I know there's so many people that are just lost. They don't know who to talk to, where to go. Now with Facebook and with your podcast and things like that, it's so empowering to go, finally, I have someone that I can tell our story to. You know, here for us, I know I've told you this, the media hasn't been interested in talking to us at all. They never once came to us and said, hey, would you like to tell your side of the story? I reached out to a couple of them. They never responded back. So it's been very, very one-sided and very difficult throughout this entire process. But thank you. Thank you for having
me. Kathy, let
me
ask you, you're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. And you coming on empowers others as well. And it's just so important to, you know, I mean, I got goosebumps and I teared up when you just said what you said. I have to say, because of the energy that we all brought in at that rally, and that we continue to work with and just become better as we go along. And there are other rallies that you know are also taking place, you know, with like-minded people, and we'll be back out there again. And there's something else that's going on that I'm going to be announcing very, very soon.
Good.
That I think will be that I shared with you, Kathy. Will also be a phenomenal all-in-one forum to lay out the horrendous misdeeds when they are taking place in Oklahoma. And you know, it's like I've said in this promotion and sharing it. You know, one wrongful conviction is too many. And it's just horrible. It's just horrible if that happens. And then when it happens, and the people that allow this to happen know it's happened.
Yes.
How do they look at
themselves? They do. And that, I don't know, because I know with our case, I think I told you the last time I was on the show, but you know, this was an accident that happened at 3:30 in the morning on a dark road in the middle of the night. Dakota and Gage didn't see anyone. They never saw anyone. And that was one thing that was just mind-boggling to us, was how could this happen? How could you run off the road and run over two people and not know? You know, they, from day one, they said, we never saw anyone. And if you go back, I've been sharing so much on the straw, and the other people that helped me with the straw, thank God for them. They've been sharing so much, and we dig through this evidence. And you can see in Dakota's
Why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but why don't you tell the listeners where they can find the page on behalf of your grandsons. And then, you know, and then we'll just, if you would go over the quick summary of, you know, what happened, what they were charged with. You know, they've been in a prison for almost 2 years, 2 years in June, so over 2 years now.
Yeah.
And then we'll get into the details. All right. So let's talk about your page where people can look at the information firsthand.
Yes. The page is called The Straw That Broke. And then you can also find it from hashtag Shriver Brothers Truth. So that's the page, and that page is dedicated for sharing evidence. It's not a forum where people can come on and state their opinions, although we do approve some of those sometimes when we feel like it's beneficial. But we don't have that page is not there for people to come and, like I said, make it into a forum where there's arguing back and forth about this and that. It's strictly there to show the actual evidence that we have in our possession, to show the photos, to show the differences between what was said in court and what the evidence shows. It's there to bring, you know, to open people's eyes to, this is why we have the page, because for us, we didn't get the evidence until after the trial. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it is the truth. We did not see the photos, get all the information until after trial. What happened in our case, just to give a brief summary, is Dakota and Gage had gone to a Quick Trip in Verdigris, Oklahoma. And
it's like a little store, right?
It is.
It's like a mini mart or something.
Well, it's a very busy convenience store. Everybody stops at Quick Trip. So it's on Highway 66 that goes to Claremore and goes to Tulsa. And so a lot of people traveling from the casinos and things will take Highway 66. There's a cutoff road. It's called Gordon Road. And they'll take that road because it's a shortcut from, like, the major casino, which is the Hard Rock, and from Catoosa and all of that to get to the Quick Trip and to get to Claremore. So even though it's a rural, it's like a little rural cutoff road, it's very heavily traveled. And so they had gone to Quick Trip this night. It was on a Thursday night at 3:30 in the morning. And on the way out of there, they got into a confrontation. Dakota hit Gage. Gage was driving. It actually knocked Gage out. Gage was in a serious accident 2 years before this happened, and he was in intensive care for over 30 days with a serious brain and head injury, which occurred to him on his right side of his head. When Dakota hit Gage, he hit him on that same side, and it literally knocked Gage out. And so they veered off the road. The truck went out.
And Gage was driving.
Gage was driving, but he was knocked out when they drove off the road. And
he was 21 at the time.
Gage was 19. He had just graduated from high school just a few weeks before. And Dakota was 21. And so the truck just continued to veer off. You know, it went through a fence out into this pasture, and it continued to go for 400 feet, which is quite a ways, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
About that time, Gage wakes up. He realizes his brother hit him. They jump out of the truck. They get into a more of an altercation. They have a fist fight out in the middle of this field. This is where Dakota lost his wallet. He lost a pocket knife, skull. They get back in the truck finally when they get through fighting, and it's dark on this night, and they try to get out of the field, and they realize they can't get out close to where they're at the 400 feet mark because the fence runs all the way along the road. So Dakota says to Gage, go back up to where we came in because there's that opening in the fence where we drove off.
So at this point, they're not fighting anymore. They're beyond that, right? So
yes,
just because people might be going, okay, these guys are fighting, and all right, so what, you know, this was a common thing with them. You know, they're a couple years apart, competitiveness.
They're 2 years apart, and they've always gotten along very well, except kind of when they started being adults and having their own ideas about things, and they want to be boss, and this one wants to be boss, and they've had a couple of fist fights. I mean, you know, not that anybody's proud of that, but they've had a couple of fist fights, and this was one of them.
And they always wind up okay with each other, ultimately, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh, yes.
Okay,
always.
Right.
I have two sons
that are 2 years apart, and I remember the wrestling days and all that stuff and the competition, but they're always, you know, and they're still competitive, but they're always each other's, you know, number one fans, too.
Yes.
And they'll be there
to
back you up
100%. You bet. The first one they call when something exciting happens, the first one to call when something bad happens. And yes, very, very close. And so then they realize they need to get out of the field. And so they drive back up, and they see the trees, the opening in the trees. This fence line was covered with shrubs and trees. It's not like a fence where it had been mowed down. So lots of trees, lots of small trees, lots of bushes, debris, all that kind of stuff along this barbed wire fence line. So
okay, and listeners, if you're have access to your computers right now, and you go on, you take a look. It's public, right? People can see this public on the page. This draw that broke, you will see that there are pictures that are posted relatively recently where you'll actually see pictures from the scene of where this happened exactly. Okay, so
yes.
Okay, go ahead.
And so then they make it back up and they try to get out and they can't. They get stuck and they back up a little bit. And anyway, they finally get out and they drive out and they drive off to the left, which is going to be towards their home. Quick Trip is to the right. So they left Quick Trip, drove off the road to the left. Okay, drove off the road to the left, ran over the fence, ran over the trees, drove out into the field. Now they make their way back around. They get to the road, and they get up on the roadway, and they're now going to the left to go home. So then they go home. Mom wakes up. She hears them drive in. She wakes up. She gets up. She finds out they've been fighting. She's very upset with both of them. Her sister was staying with them at the house. She gets up, their aunt gets up, and they see Gage has been beat up pretty bad. You can see that in the arrest photos if they go look at that. But she goes to the freezer, gets a bag of, you know, frozen vegetables to put on his face. And the reason I'm bringing this up is there wasn't any, oh, my God, they're panicked because they ran over someone. They need to get back over there and clean everything up.
At this point, that was unknown, anybody being run over.
Right.
And
completely
right.
Unknown. Completely okay. Unknown. They parked the truck in front of the house when they got home. That was witnessed by the mom, the stepdad, and the aunt. The aunt gets the frozen vegetables. They're talking to the boys. They've got the ice, putting it on his face. They're trying to get everything calmed down, get their family put back together, you know, and this and that. Well, this is on a Thursday night. And the mom,
my daughter.
This is in
Rogers County, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
And the mom has to be at, she's supposed to be at our place of business by 7 o'clock the next morning because we were having a big convention. And she was basically in charge of that. And so she said, you know, they talked and then they went out and looked at the truck that was parked in front of the house. She's like, well, this isn't too bad. I think we can fix it. So they're talking and then she runs out of cigarettes and she says, you know, I'm not going back to bed because I've got to be at work soon. Let's go to Quick Trip. I need to get cigarettes and let's have a look at this fence that you guys ran through. So they get in, the three of them get into her Suburban and they're driving to Quick Trip. Now I want to stop and.
You there?
Hello?
Yep. Okay.
Oh, okay. So where they live, Tanya, they live on a dead-end road. There's only one way mm-hmm. in and one way out. And they have to pass security cameras, okay? The neighbor across the street has security cameras. So everything I'm telling you here is validated by the security camera, and the police got that footage. So they knew that what Dakota and Gage told them and what their mom told them was true. The only time they left the house that morning was at 5:35, basically, somewhere right along in there, to go to Quick Trip. It's about an 8-minute drive to where this accident happened. So
okay,
and
the reason that they were out so late, was that a normal thing for them to be driving at that hour in the morning? I thought it was closer to 3-something in the morning.
It was 3:30 in the morning. And,
okay.
That's what time they left Quick Trip was 3:30 in the morning. They left their house at like 3:15 or so to go to Quick Trip. But it was their little brother's birthday. They had all gone to Dave and Buster's to have food and pizza. Then after the little brother's birthday, they all went back to my daughter's house and the boys all went out to have a bonfire and to sit out there and talk and all that. And the mom and my daughter went to bed and her aunt or her sister and all of them went to bed, but the boys stayed up. So she didn't know that they had left to go to Quick Trip, you know? So anyway, so now they're going to go to Quick Trip. It's 5:35 in the morning and it's starting to get daylight. So they want to go see the hole in the fence. And I want to say something very important here because common sense was lost in this case. If they had known they had hit someone, they're not going to wait almost 2 hours to go 8 minutes back to the accident scene. And they're not
going
to go back.
If they were going to be a hit and run.
And you're not going to go back in the daylight when people are starting to leave for work and going to work, then they can see you out there trying to gather things up. So I just want to throw that in there. So
right.
they're going back to Quick Trip, and as they pass by, Dakota sees some debris and stuff up on the road, and he says, "Mom, that's where we ran off the road last night." But they were going to go to Quick Trip first and get the cigarettes and the food and then come and look at the fence. And when he looked over there, he said, "Oh, my God, I think that there's someone there." And she said, "What are you talking about?" And as they drove by, she looks in her rearview mirror and she said, "Oh, my God, I think you're right. I think there is someone." So they went up the road just a little ways on Gordon Road. There's a church. And they turned around at the church, and they came back by. And as they came back, they saw, yes, there's definitely a person over in that ditch. But it was on the other side of the road from them. So they went back up to the stop sign, turned around a second time, came back. So now they're on the same side as the ditch and the person in the ditch. And so they get out and they start talking to this person and asking her how she got there, what happened. At first they said that they thought someone had beat her up. They didn't put two and two together that it might have been them that hit them. They thought somebody may have beaten her up, and they asked her, you know, what happened to you? She said, "I don't know. Ask Tanner." Well, they didn't know her, so they didn't know this person named Tanner. But they told that to the officer whenever he finally got there. But that was a key thing, too, that she was talking to them when they found her. So my daughter yells at Gage to call 911. If you listen to the 911 call, you can hear Gage. He thinks there's only one person. He's telling the 911 office person, there is a lady in the ditch, and she's hurt, and she needs help. And he's trying mm-hmm. to tell the 911 operator where they are, but he can't really figure out, you know, how to tell her where they are. But he specifically says there's a lady here. He doesn't say there's two girls that have been hit and run over and trying to make up a bunch of stuff. He's saying there's a lady, we just found this lady in the ditch, and she's been hurt, and she needs help. She said, don't mm-hmm. call, but I'm telling you, she needs help. Everybody should go listen to that 911 tape. It's posted on the Straw. Then he
Very
can't
compelling.
Figure out how to, yes, he can't figure out how to tell them where he's at. So his mother comes over, and she says, give me the phone. She takes the phone, and she gets on there, and she says, where they're at, and she says there's actually two females here. So while Gage was on the phone talking to 911, her and Dakota saw the shoes that are sitting on the side of the road and realized there's two shoes and one flip-flop. So Annette's like, oh, my God, she asked Miranda. She said, was there someone else with you? And Miranda said, I don't know, ask Tanner. Again, she mentions Tanner. So Annette says, oh, my God, I think there might be someone else here. So they walk out into the pasture, and right around the backside of the fence there, unfortunately, it's a horrible way. Miss New was there, and she was face down, and she was deceased. And Annette says, just by looking at her, she knew she was deceased. And Dakota reached down and touched her on the back of her arm, and he said she
right,
was cold.
Right, and so here he is putting, you know, placing DNA on
yes.
on the deceased.
Well, yeah, I don't know if they, you know, tested that or found that or whatever. But
right.
he said
but
yes.
But clearly not
skin.
Putting on gloves to do
no.
it.
No. Yeah, right. And he just touched her skin. He didn't touch her clothing or anything like that.
Right.
So anyway, that to me was compelling as well, because they, when they came back to the 911 operator, they said there's two. So the guys didn't know there was two young ladies that were hit there the night before, because
mm-hmm.
they just didn't. But they didn't tell when the first responders got there, and they said, how did you happen upon this? They said, we were driving to Quick Trip, which was the truth. We saw the person over in the ditch. You know, we called for help. But they didn't say, hey, we ran off the road here last night. So they go home. Well, when they get home, the officers find Dakota's wallet and his pocket knife out that 400 feet. They followed the tracks of the vehicle, and they found it out there 400 feet away from where the accident happened on the side of the road. And there was blood out there where the guys had the fight. So all that proved that that story was, you know, correct. And that blood came back to just being Dakota engaged. There wasn't anything else out there in the field. But so then they called them and they said, hey, we need you to come back. We found your wallet. Oh, no, they didn't tell them we found your wallet. We need you to come back to the scene of the accident. We have some more questions for you. So Annette told Dakota, because that's who they asked to come back, was Annette and Dakota. And my daughter's first name's Dorothea, and they called her Dorothea through this whole thing, but we call her Annette. But anyway, they said, we need you to come back, you and Dakota. They didn't ask for Gage. So anyway, they went back. They talked to them. That's when they said, hey, we found your wallet out in the field. And then Dakota says, yes, you know, we had a wreck here last night. We ran off into this field. And so within just like an hour, they were arrested. And so we just were like, how could this happen? You know, but your mind says it had to be you. You know, what are the odds?
So I'm going to Christy. Okay. Just sent me a message. She just posted that, 911 call. It's just a little over a minute. So what I'm going to do, and see if this comes in, I'm going to put my here. Listen to this.
I'm a little sick.
Frank, can I want with that? Is your emergency?
Yes, I want to. Sorry, I'm a little sick. There's a quick trip in Verdigris, and then on the way to the Port of Catoosa, there's a road right in between there.
Yes.
There's a lady on the side of the road that has been hurt. I don't know what's going on with her.
Okay, where's she at?
She is in between the quick trip.
Is she on 66?
I don't know what road it is.
Is it the road that goes to Port of Catoosa from Highway 66?
It's a straight shot. It's a straight shot.
That's 530. How far east of the highway is it? Or how far west of the highway is it?
Okay.
Do you know what's wrong with her?
No, I don't. I honestly don't.
Is she complaining of any pain or anything?
No, she actually didn't want us to call the cops, but she needs it. I'm telling you.
Okay, is she bleeding or anything?
Yeah.
She is bleeding?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you tell where she's bleeding from?
No.
Is she like covered in blood?
No.
Where's she? You can't tell where she's bleeding from?
Here, just one second.
Hey, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, we've got one.
Okay. Oops.
It looks like they may have been hit by a car, and we've got one that's not. She's not moving.
Okay, I'm going to put you on for just a second so I can page out the fire department, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so I hope our listeners were able to hear that. So that was actually Dakota and his mother,
Gage.
Right?
That was Gage.
I'm so sorry. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
All
that's
right.
Okay.
So were you able to hear that okay?
Yes, I could hear it just
okay,
fine.
Okay, so that means others could hear that okay, hopefully. All right. So that was the 911 call, and just as you said. All right. So thank you, Christy Benton, for bringing that to my attention and making it easily accessible. So, all right. So,
and that's our goal, and is just to bring all of the evidence and things that people haven't heard before out. So they called 911. The first responders arrived, and they stayed, you know, with them until the first responders arrived. Then when they got there, they left and went home. And then, as I said, they called them and asked them to come back. When they got back, my daughter, she just kind of was resolved that she just had to help them and share everything. And she did. If you go listen to Everything that she testified to, she signed over the truck. She told them where the truck was. She said, you know, they didn't panic until after they found when they found the girls that morning, and after the first responders got there, they drove home. That truck was parked in front of the house. They didn't know to panic before that because they didn't know there was anybody there that had been hit. Then when they got home, that's when the panic all set in. And so Dakota took the truck and parked it in the North 40 out in the woods. And so that just further
made
them look guilty.
So they were in protective mode at first.
They were.
They were in protective mode, but okay, go ahead.
And their mother told them, don't say anything, which I just talked to a private investigator the other day and an attorney, and they said I would have told them the same thing. Don't say anything.
Right.
You know, so
right.
she advised them, I think, like a mother would, and advised them like they should have been advised. Don't say anything. You never saw these girls. You don't know that you hit them. Anyway, so when they went back.
Well, like an attorney would say that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, defense attorney, right.
Right. And so anyway, she, you know, told them where the truck was behind the house. She signed off for it so they didn't have to get a search warrant. She signed the permission for them to take the truck so they didn't have to get a warrant for that. She helped them every way she possibly could. And the boys told the very same story. They were in two different interrogation rooms. They told the exact, once they started telling, opening up and saying, here's what happened, here's what really happened. They told the exact same story. There was no variation in what they had to say.
So they separated them to check on the stories okay.
Yes. And they were identical. And Annette's, you know, I mean, she turned over everything. So then the investigator told Dakota, and that's on the straw, he said, you know, there's a video camera on the house across the street from where this happened. And he kept asking him if they had moved the girls or touched the girls or if they knew they hit them. And he's like, no, we never saw them. And he said, well, there's a video camera on the house across the street. And right now they're looking at that footage. And so we're going to know what you did. And Dakota was so relieved. You can see it. That's posted on the straw as well. He was so relieved. And he said, oh, that's going to prove that we didn't see him. That's going to prove we never touched him because we never saw him. Well, as it turned out, there was no video in that particular, that house didn't have one, so that didn't help them out. So the officer said, well, you know, you're probably going to get charged with vehicular manslaughter or manslaughter. And Dakota said, you know, and he's kept asking him, you sure you didn't see him? He said, I swear we didn't see him. Then some key things that were said, too, he said.
So the officer is already
like,
saying what he's probably going to be charged.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Now, was this
yeah.
a highway officer?
Yes, the OHP, Officer Ledbetter, it's in the interview that we've got posted on the page.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to him, now he said, it looks to me like at the accident scene that you made three or four attempts to exit. And Dakota's like, no, sir, we did not. We only made two attempts to exit there at the, you know, where we drove off. And he said, oh, no, he said, you made three or four attempts because the tire tracks go over each other right there. And Dakota said, I swear, no, we didn't. We only made two attempts. That officer, Tanya, should have stopped right there and said, you know what? Maybe we need to have another look at this. Why are there three to four sets of tire tracks right here? When this
mm-hmm.
young man is being honest with me, he's not like it. And he even said in preliminary that he believed Dakota was telling him the truth the whole time he was talking to him. So if he believed that, why didn't he stop right there and say, you know, let's go back out here to this. Let's go have a look at this again. But he didn't. So we were shocked come Monday when they were charged with second degree murder.
Yep.
It was the craziest thing. We could not believe it. We're like, you run off the road at 3:30 in the morning, in the middle of the night, you don't see anybody, and they're charging you with second-degree murder?
Right.
So it was just shocking to us. And so, and then the media got a hold of that, and they kept repeating it, how, and then the stories and the rumors started circulating.
Did it seem more like a press release
you know, than anything else.
Yes.
As far as what was being released, because they didn't come to you for comment.
No.
Or anybody else.
No.
Other than, okay.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and so then the media caught up with Dakota and Gage when they were in the yard there in the jail. They had all gone outside, or they'd been moved from one spot to the other, and they go over and stick their microphone in their face, and they say, you know, what do you have to say to this family, you know, about what happened? And Dakota and Gage being Dakota and Gage and really not knowing that they didn't hit him, they said, we're so sorry. We're just so sorry this ever happened. We're sorry. And so then they took that and twisted it into, well, they said they were sorry, so they did this, you know. So, Tanya, for 2 years.
Well, they weren't sure. They weren't sure either.
No.
At that point, right? And let our audience know, the listeners know also that, you know, there is a great deal of compassion and sadness for the young woman that was killed as a result of the accident that did happen, as well as the injured woman.
And to think that you did something like that, you didn't mean to do it, you know, and you never saw him, and you didn't mean to do it, but you did it, apparently. You've been charged for doing it. You know, the investigators said you did it. They said they had proof you did it, so you must have done it.
Right.
And even, you know, our family, our friends, our community, we all believed that this was a horrible accident that happened, but they couldn't plead guilty. They could not plead guilty to second-degree murder, Tanya. They couldn't. There was no reason to plead guilty to second-degree murder.
The listeners know what second-degree is. Oklahoma Penal Code, Section 27-7018, murder in the second degree. All right, so what's prohibited is homicide is murder in the second degree in the following cases. One, when a killing is done by an act that is imminently dangerous to another person and indicates a depraved mind, although done without premeditation, or when a killing is committed by a person engaged in a felony other than those set out in Section 1, subsection B, all right, and then definition of a depraved mind, thoughts marked by moral corruption or perversion. These thoughts are shown by a capacity for extreme deliberate physical cruelty, definition of premeditation, considering or planning an act beforehand. But again, you know, they're saying that although done without premeditation, penalties, felony, punishable by imprisonment for at least 10 years and at most imprisonment for life. As is,
right.
they are sentenced to 25 years. So, you know, they give examples here of, you know, like DUI, for instance. Now, is there any denial or any, you know, was there drinking involved?
Yes, there was.
There was.
They had been drinking.
Nobody tried?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, they did not try to hide that. No. No. Neither one of them had ever had any trouble. Gage hasn't even had so much as a traffic ticket. Dakota had a couple of wrecks and things, but no, neither of them ever had DUIs or, you know, anything like that, any criminal charges. They admitted readily, and that's what the officer had said, too. He believed both of them because they readily admitted what happened that night. Exactly what took place, that they were drinking beer, that they did decide to go to Quick Trip, which was horribly stupid, which they, you know, that they did run off the road, that they should have stayed there and called 911 and said, hey, we ran off the road, but they didn't. And so there was things they did wrong, and they knew there were things they did wrong, but second degree murder, they couldn't plead guilty to that, you know, so they pled not guilty. And we, our attorneys, job, basically what everyone was working was to mitigate the charges down, not to prove that they were innocent, because we didn't know they didn't do it until after the trial.
And didn't know they didn't do it either.
They did not know it. It took me several times of talking to Dakota in prison to convince him. He just kept saying, you know, Nanny, I know you want to believe we didn't do it. I said, Dakota, I've looked at the photographs. I've looked at the DNA evidence. I've looked at the injuries to the bodies. I'm telling you, this truck did not hit these young ladies. In fact, it would be physically impossible for you to have hit them with the angle that your truck drove off the road and where the shoes are located and where the blood in the roadway is located. And we have an unidentified tire track that doesn't match the other tire track. I said, it's physically impossible for you to have done that. And
so at this point then, and I'm going to interject just a little bit. So, you know, they admit that they had been drinking and that as far as they knew, they really did hit, cause the death of this one woman, one young lady, and had to live with that.
Right.
And then the defense team was doing everything that they felt that they could do. And the murder, second degree murder defenses are, okay, let's start with number one, which is actual innocence, which of course is now what you are fighting for, since all this
yeah.
evidence shows their actual innocence. Also
yeah.
insanity, self-defense, and then intoxication. So
so
if I'm getting it right, the defense attorney was mitigating it down as much as possible, given intoxication, I'm assuming.
Right. Well,
right, that they reckless driving.
Well, the intoxication didn't. That's what's so crazy about this case, because Gage didn't drive off the road because he was intoxicated. Gage
drove
perfectly
off the
fine
road
all the way from
him.
Home. He
right.
drove off the road because his brother punched him. Yeah,
right.
So Gage, you're driving along. I mean, why they chose to charge Gage makes no sense. It's never made any sense. Because you're
right.
driving along, you're driving fine. He drove, he drove 10 miles from his house over there through some road construction, drove, parked perfectly fine at Quick Trip, went into Quick Trip perfectly fine. We have all that video. He, you know, knew to put his money back in his pocket. I mean, he wasn't in talk. You can tell, yes, he admitted he'd had a few beers, but he was not staggering, falling down,
right.
too drunk to drive. What made him drive off the road was when his brother punched him. So why they charged Gage, it was just mind-blowing. But
now, are their sentences mirrored? Are they exactly the same?
They're the same sentence with different charges. Gage's charges were manslaughter, and Dakota's was the murder, second-degree murder.
Okay.
And so Dakota wasn't driving the car. So it was a
right.
really odd situation, because you have a person charged that wouldn't have driven off the road, and then you have a person that's charged that wasn't driving. But when they got to preliminary hearing, this was like, you know, the first time we're hearing any evidence at all. You know, you don't get anything. When you're charged with something, nobody comes up to you with a packet and says, here's the pictures, here's this, here's that. And so we go to preliminary,
Okay, go ahead. Keep going. I'll save it. Go ahead.
The OHP officer tells the defense attorneys are asking, where's the the blood evidence and this and that, and he says he doesn't have it back from OSBI. Well, he got that back June 24th, and preliminary hearing wasn't until October 30th. So he'd had it all that time, but it showed there was no DNA evidence, no blood, no hair, nothing that matched those girls on the truck or anything. So instead of saying to the judge and being honest, he perjured himself. He should have said, yes, we have it back. And the next question would have been, well, what did it show? And that would have been, well, it didn't have anything on it. And then I think the judge would have stopped and said, what do you mean it didn't have anything on it? You know, it would have sent up some red flags.
Right.
The other thing was, Tanya, is that he they ask him if he had the crime scene mapping done. And the OHP, Officer Ledbetter, said no, he didn't have it finished yet. And so the defense attorney said, how many months has this been now? And he said, well, June, July, August, September, October, November. So 5, almost 6 months to finish a crime scene mapping. And he didn't have it done. And the reason he didn't have it done is because he couldn't get all the dots to connect. There was no way he could make the shoes and the blood in the road.
And this is key. This is key,
yes.
Listeners. Okay, this is key. All right, so I want to let our listeners know that as Kathy is sharing this information with us, Christy Benton, who is a family member, correct?
Yes.
Okay. She has been sharing on the page that all of this evidence, this compelling information that really has not been brought forward properly in defense of the Schreiber brothers. She is sharing this information. Like she just told me that she shared the interview with Dakota, I believe. So as Kathy's bringing these things up, the information is being shared. So it's on top of that page, The Straw That Broke, for your reference, listeners. And as well, I want you to know that if you go on oscn.net, oscn.net, if you just put this brings you to the court search documents, and you can just leave it at all Oklahoma courts, because that'll allow you to see what's filed in Rogers County as well as in the appellate court, where there's a phenomenal brief on behalf of Dakota and Gage. So you can get a good look at the brief that tells where some of the wrongs occurred and why this needs to be retried or thrown out in essence. Okay, so
yes.
Keep going. I just want to let our listeners know that.
Okay, so in my mind, what should have happened in preliminary when OHP Ledbetter said, I'm not finished with the crime scene mapping, those
Oklahoma Highway Patrol,
said,
Oklahoma
yes.
Highway Patrol, OHP, go ahead.
Yes, those
as opposed to a special homicide investigation. Unit.
Yes, there was never a homicide investigator, never. It was always the OHP trying to reconstruct an accident scene instead of looking at the blood and the DNA and all of that. But those defense attorneys should have demanded that crime scene mapping be turned over at preliminary. And if it wasn't turned over at preliminary, they should have said, we need to move this forward. You know, we need to not have set this for trial, because how can you say somebody ran over someone if you haven't even turned in the crime scene mapping? That is ridiculous that this judge and the defense attorneys, I was very disappointed in them, that they didn't say, wait, you know, we have to have that. And it's ridiculous to think that Oklahoma Highway Patrolman 6 months down the road after an accident doesn't have a simple crime scene mapping done. And he never did a reconstruction. There was never a reconstruction done of this accident.
And this is
just
a homicide case.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This is a murder.
And this is putting
second-degree murder.
Yes. Yes. And this is putting two young men behind bars for 25 years.
Yes. Yes.
As
and so, you know, yeah. And it was just, unbelievable that, you know, we didn't get the discovery packet until just a few days before the actual trial. I think it was like a week before the trial. And, you know, nobody knew what they were looking for. We didn't know that they had ran off the road to the left and there was blood in the road over to the right. And we didn't know that the shoes were sitting right beside the road with dirt and grass flung up on top of them. And we didn't know there was a tire track right next to those shoes, a clear impression of a tire track.
So you found that out 10 days before trial, correct?
No. I didn't find that out until after the trial. I don't know when the attorney.
What about when the defense attorney found out?
They got the packet about 10 days before trial, but I don't know if they looked at it.
And that is in accordance to the statutes.
Yes, of mm-hmm. Oklahoma. And
which is
this
crazy.
Is something that. Yeah, this is something we want to advocate. We want it to be Shriver's Law, which says mm-hmm. that the minute there is physical evidence available, the defense, the person on trial, the person that's fighting for their freedom and their life has to have access to that. They have to be able to look at that as soon as it's made available. It's such a game. You don't have time 10 days before trial to hire experts to go through
right.
thousands
to reconstruct.
Of pages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I am just now finding things still to this day. I spoke the other day with a very well-known private investigator. He's very highly respected in the state of Oklahoma. He took the time to come over and sit down with me, and he looked at the photos, and he looked at the DNA evidence, and he looked at the photos of the truck, and he looked at me, and he said, "This is unbelievable. In 20 minutes, I see that there is something very wrong here. In 20 minutes of looking at this, I believe this, they are innocent." And, you know, that was just compelling to me. That, so how can anyone, why do we have so many wrongful convictions? Because of this. Because of this, they don't give you the pictures, the photos, the evidence. They don't hand it over until it's like a game. They hang
right.
on to it until right before trial. Well,
and not to mention in Oklahoma, I believe the prosecution has the final say as opposed to the defense. Is that correct?
They do. And this prosecutor lied. He absolutely, we can prove it. It's in black and white. He lied to the jury. He said that Ms. Talley couldn't speak when Dakota and Annette and Gage found her, that they lied about that. They made that up. He said there was a full moon that night. There was not a full moon that night. He said mm-hmm. it was just terrible. It was just terrible the way he twisted and he wanted to win that no matter what.
And that's very, very easy to So these are the things that were said to a jury.
Yes.
And did their defense team oppose those?
They asked for a mistrial because there was some things going on that weren't supposed to be going on. This judge would roll his eyes. When they asked for a mistrial, he leaned over the pulpit and looked at them and screamed, "Denied!" like it was some sort of
wow.
a joke. And
right.
he told one of the attorneys that he himself had never gotten drunk and ran over two girls. So this was his mindset for this trial,
okay.
he should have recused himself.
Yeah, it appears as though there was bias, and
yeah.
and so did the based on those kinds of conversations for sure. So did the defense do anything to try to have that judge dismiss himself, recuse himself?
No, and in fact, one of the attorneys, he and his after the trial was over, when he wrote, I don't even know what it's called now, but on Gage's behalf, he wrote that he should have asked for the judge to recuse himself. He mentioned all of the things that the judge did improperly. He mentioned the things that the prosecutors did improperly. And he said he probably did not provide the best legal assistance for Gage. So I so appreciated him, you know, being so honest
doing
like that.
That
but
mm-hmm.
it was such
you
a,
don't see that very
a,
often.
No, you don't. He's a very honorable. He's a good attorney. He is. And he's honorable of a man. But I think that this case was just overwhelming to all, to everyone.
Over his head. Yep, over
his
head.
Well, you didn't get the evidence. What are you supposed to do? You don't even know what happened. See, how can they do this in the state of Oklahoma? How can
so
they
you don't
keep
even know
that?
The prosecutor's claims and evidence that they're providing in order to put these young men in jail for a lifetime sentence is 45 years, right? So they got 25, right? So half of a lifetime when they actually are, you know, didn't commit those crimes through negligence or any other way. It just was, like you said, the perfect storm. And all of this, you're like the what is it called? The Duracell bunny rabbit, you know, battery. But you have been on this case, and you have taken it upon yourself.
When I saw those photos, I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, who in their right mind could even believe that that this vehicle did this? And then you take that and you take the no DNA on the front of the truck, you know, on the hood, on the bumper, on the wheel wells, no DNA anywhere there. No, both of these girls had long, thick hair. There was no hair. They found two hairs, and these were little, tiny, straight, white hairs. Why they even bothered to admit them into evidence, you know, I don't know. But here's what they did too, Tanya. I want to get this out here that this was so unbelievable. When they did the crime scene mapping, they take this series of photos. It's like a giant photo album. And so Officer Ledbetter's, his photos all started with the number 43. So, like, you could look at the photos, and they'll have, like, on this map an arrow. And then at the top of the arrow, it'll say, you know, 4389. And that tells you what that picture corresponds with that arrow on the map. Well, pictures number 4303, 4299, 4295, 4296 were all
those in the fours and then
blood.
Those in the twos.
Yeah.
Go ahead, I'm
those
sorry.
Were all pictures that those were all pictures of the blood out in the roadway, right? None of those numbers were on that crime scene mapping. 4288, 4289 were the shoes sitting just on the side of the road. Those were not on there. That 4286 was the loose dirt that was thrown up on the road. And then 4287 was the unidentified tire tracks. So they chose to leave all of that off of that crime scene mapping.
Mm-hmm.
And that's physical evidence. That is
okay. So listeners, this might sound cumbersome, but if you go over there with patient mind and heart, and you look at the straw that broke, these are posted, and this is actual. These are actual exhibits. Okay, based on part of it is what was brought forward, and then what wasn't brought forward. So it was like a certain information was filtered out that should never have been filtered out, that influences the jury wrongfully. So if you're a juror, of course you're going to rule the way that you ruled, finding guilt of these young men. Okay, this, of course you're going to. But so when the jury is wrongfully informed or not completely informed, and when bias has been brought in, you can't get mad at the jury, at the jurors.
Right.
You can't. This is what they have to go by, just like with the Daniel Holtzclaw case. This is what they had to go by. There's DNA that proves otherwise. DNA is a darn big deal. And if they are selecting and filtering through the DNA that only works on behalf of the prosecution, or it's being tampered with, then how's the jury supposed to know about it? How the heck is the jury supposed to know about it? And that's, again, where it comes to the right to due process and to be able to, you know, ask for, you know, get redress, to have a new trial. There's new information now, folks. So these guys were tried thinking that and found guilty, still thinking that they actually were the cause of injury and you know, the deceased young woman. And now there's new evidence that's here. That guess what? That would have been brought forward if the prosecutors, if the investigators did the right thing, as well as the defense for these young men, rightfully so, admits he was not able to properly defend them, given the time frame and the great deal of information 10 days before the trial to present a proper defense. So where are we at here now? This is just, you know, and the perjury.
Well,
and
the good news,
actual perjury.
Yes, there is. There is, and there's withholding of the evidence, you know, like those photos. They're in the file, but who knows what they're looking for until you really get in there and dig around. And it's so interesting when you zoom in. In fact, just recently, another look at some of these photos, we think that there is a possibility that we have found actually something that belongs to another vehicle. But we're not going to tell what it is or where we saw it or where we found it until we have an expert look at it. And so what we're doing now, even though we can look at the photos, you know, I can show them to you. I can show the autopsy. I can show the injuries. I can say, you know, this truck has it doesn't match up with the injuries.
But the truck
with
the has
blood.
Been destroyed.
Right.
The truck has been crushed and destroyed. Who does that?
Yeah. They did that before preliminary even happened. And then they tried to hide behind the fact that they said that the title hadn't been switched over yet into my daughter's name.
That itself is a mistrial.
Well, yeah. But the insurance policy was in her name. She had an insured interest in the vehicle, because the insurance policy was in her name, and they knew which insurance company to call and which person's name it was in. So to hide behind, the title hadn't been
all insurance
yet.
Set aside, all insurance information, all those little, you know, schemes set aside to deflect from the reality, the fact that that truck is alleged to be a part of a second-degree homicide.
Yeah.
Murder. Then no, you do not destroy that evidence.
Right.
There's appeals. There is innocence that is being claimed. That is a destruction of evidence. You can't hide behind that technicality. God, please tell me that you can't hide behind that technicality.
The judge addressed that when my daughter, you know, that my daughter's attorney talked her into pleading. People say, well, why did she plead guilty if this didn't all happen the way they said? And I said, you've got to understand, she just saw her two sons be sentenced to 25 years for, at what we thought at the time was an accident. And they're telling her that she could, if she went to trial, she could get up to life. She could get the same thing or half of what they got. And she still had a son at home. Yeah, she had a son at home, a younger son that she needed to stay home with. And her attorney's like, well, if you just plead guilty, you've never been in trouble. You know, they're going to give you probation. And so that's what she did. And it was just so sad to see her do that and then them turn around and sentence her the way they did. But the judge,
I can't tell you how many times I have heard that scenario where they scare you into pleading guilty and they actually lie to you. So again, this goes back to, we could all be telling each other stories. It's just in a different county with a different judge or the same judge or whatever, you know, there are these patterns that just seem to be so heinously going on, to the point where it's actually transparent. And, you know, that's bittersweet. Okay, it's bitter because they've been getting away with it, but it's sweet because they're so careless. They're so careless to the point that it is provable that the wrongs are being done. So anybody who's on the fence about coming forward, you know, this is, again, it's a personal decision. But you have to remember, this isn't just about you, and you. That most people, so many people, come to the, into this advocacy and listen to these stations because somehow they have been impacted. All right, it's about the others.
Yeah.
It's about all of us. It is about those that are sitting out there and have no idea that they are the next sitting ducks. And if they're on the wrong side, this is predetermined, baby. This is just how it goes. And you can spend $100,000 on an attorney or you can spend nothing. The same outcome will occur if you are engaging, if you are being heard in a corrupt system. Again, I'm not saying they're all corrupt, but when this is happening, there is this. We need to show that there is zero tolerance. Stand up together and start sending complaints to the Attorney General's office. Get to the state agencies, because once you get to the state agencies and they're refusing you a true investigation, giving you these little blanket answers, oh, it's not in the jurisdiction and this, that, and the other thing, then guess what? That's pretty much, you know, you have our empathy, a back pat, and go away. Okay, they'll just plug your name in there and say, speak to your local rep if you're lucky. Guess what? When you get that back, and they're not doing anything to help you, when you have shown what has gone wrong and what our Constitution says that they did wrong, then that Attorney General, that Bar Association, that Court of the Judiciary, they are supposed to act on behalf of we the people, okay? Not on behalf of the other judges, not on behalf of themselves and their own alliances, not on behalf of their own greed, their own corruption, and they are working for us people. They are working for us, and there are the good ones out there that really do want to fight you. There are some good ones out there that really do want to fight the bad system, but they are asking, and I had a two-hour conversation with a representative from Oklahoma, and I'm not going to give names right now, the other day, and he said everything that he said, we totally aligned. We like-minded about the corruption that is going on. He said, I need people to stand up and be willing to back me on this. I need people to back me on this. And he also expressed a concern that, you know, if he comes forward, when he comes forward, he's afraid that there's going to be drugs planted in his truck or something like that, you know, to just kind of get him out of there, okay? Because there are too many people that are embedded into this corrupt system. And maybe they didn't start out wanting to be that way, but that's what they are. And they're not there helping you. And if they turn their backs on you, they have a duty to report. And those you report to, if it's the governor, if it's the attorney general's office, then shame on them. Then we go higher up if they don't do anything about it. Go ahead.
Yes. Oh, I just want to know if, you know, and I don't know how the civil court system works, but for me as an individual, I want to find a way to hold especially this investigator accountable. For his part in this wrongful conviction. Like you said, when people make a mistake, we can all make mistakes. But when we have it in black and white that they deliberately chose to do this, we should have some sort of recourse against them. I saw where somebody's suing Sheriff Glantz for how he ran the jail there in Tulsa. And they have a personal lawsuit against him for $250,000, as well as several million against the state of Oklahoma or the city of Tulsa. And they very rightfully should. And he should be, in my opinion, he should be held personally, financially accountable. When my grandsons were tried, I spent my life savings trying to you know, get them off, to protect them, to provide the best defense that we could. And I think this investigator and anybody that was connected with this that made a deliberate, conscious decision to withhold evidence or twist evidence should be held accountable.
Right. And this is where, you know, supposedly people, you know, have immunity, right? Okay. So now this is where, you know, from my research, I have learned, but I will say, in my opinion, to be safe, okay, but from my research, you know, the judges are not immune. The investigators are not immune. The crime labs are not immune. The prosecutors are not immune too. Acting outside of their duty, of their office that they swore in oath to. So what did they swear to do? To uphold and to abide by the canons for the judges, right? So the due process, to not deny due process, to, you know, all the things. When if you go and you look and you can find this stuff, I just, you know, we're going to be running low, and I did not prepare myself with these oaths of office that must be taken. But it's even when, listen, you have trash picker uppers, okay? You've got maintenance men that work for the state, and they have to sign contracts, what they're willing to do, what they're going to do, okay? So
right.
So and they're not immune. People will prosecute them if they do something while they're on duty that is illegal. Am I right? So people should prosecute the judges, the prosecutors, the investigative team, the forensics team that do things that are illegal while on duty. So they're acting outside of what they have sworn to do in their oath of office as public servants to us. Go after them.
And,
go sue
and
them.
I don't think they're going to. They're not going to change until that happens. What they get a slap on the hand, and then they get sent to a different jurisdiction, and they keep their jobs, and nothing happens to them. So
they resign, quote unquote.
Right. Yeah, the punishment for that? So, yes, I think personally going after, finding an attorney that is willing to take a case, especially when like ours, when we have something in black and white, and we have a lot of it,
mm-hmm.
photos, statements, I mean, we have a lot of evidence to show there was wrongdoing. I would love to see an attorney take that and personally sue them. Absolutely. I think they should be.
Correct. And I know there's some good ones out there, but I just don't know if you're going to find luck with that in the state of Oklahoma. My true belief is, as a rule, okay, I'm certain that there's exceptions to the rule, but I'm just not confident with where they lie as far as, you know, an attorney goes, you need to go to Texas or to a bordering state and find somebody who is not in front of the same judge, the same appeals court, you know, same every day, right? And they need to fight on your behalf. They need to be licensed in Oklahoma. And again, some of those other things that we had talked about the other day, which we won't get into right now on air. And this is where, you know, when you hear a case like this, you know, if you can get at least 20 people to get out there and picket, to get out there and make noise, but not in a bad way. You have to be civil.
Right.
You have to be civil. You have to be willing to share the message and why this is wrong. Not you just don't like the outcome. All right, but why this outcome is wrong, and we stand up for each other together, You know, if you can get at least 20 people to send you know, something traceable, an email to the governor, a complaint to the attorney general, to the court of the judiciary, you do not have to be a member, a party to this case with the Shriver brothers. You can listen to this podcast. You can go and look at the evidence yourself, what was said and what was not said, what was shown and what was not shown, and write to the court of the judiciary, write to the attorney general's office, write to the governor, and said this is wrong. You know, if you get enough people standing up for each other together, this is a win-win. This is a win-win, but there's something bigger than that that's going on, because but this is how we need to really stand up for each other. Of course, we do not want to stand up for imposters that are just looking for a free ticket.
Right.
You know, so you want to do some vetting.
So
where are we at now? Can you give the name of this private investigator that gave you a knee-jerk reaction after seeing certain evidence? Are you able to give that information now, or do you need to hold off on that?
I need to hold off on that because we haven't formally been able to hire him yet, but we plan on doing that, bringing him on board for our case. And once he's on board and I have his permission, that yes, I'm very excited about it too. And he, you know, he made it very clear that he doesn't take cases he doesn't believe in, because it just makes us all look ridiculous. You know,
I know it, but I'm not gonna say anything. I know who this man is, and I'm ecstatic and grateful.
And then what happens there is like I said, we have to begin to hire experts to sign off on affidavits that say yes, they've looked at, you know, the DNA, they've looked at the blood, they've looked at the autopsy photos, they've looked at the truck, they've looked at the crime scene mapping and the actual photos of the crime scene. And then they sign the affidavit saying, yes, they agree that this did not happen the way the investigator said it happened. Once we have that, then those affidavits get attached to their post-conviction relief, is my understanding. I hate this education that we're all getting through all of this, but then that carries a lot of clout and a lot of weight in hopefully getting them released, getting them a new trial, having somebody take another look at it.
Yes. Yes. And so we only have a few minutes left, and I know there's so much more to show and show and tell, and we will have you back on again as soon as we get that okay to share some information, hopefully along with that esteemed private investigator. And you did have some information. I've got about 2 minutes before I have to start closing out, but you have some information that I know that you said that you wanted to share with those that are listening, to simplify things and to take upon yourself, unless you've got, you know, very, very deep pockets. So go right ahead and then go ahead and say what you want to say, what you're looking for in the meantime. And then I'll close out for tonight.
I would just say that, you know, unfortunately cases like this, cases like our family, everybody's case, it boils down to, you know, like even these private or these experts, it's all going to be, you know, it's money. You have to hire them. You have to pay them. And but we did just recently find something in a couple of the photos. And actually, we just found something else tonight. Tanya, I didn't get to tell you about it yet. So, you know, those things come to us for a reason. And somebody said, how did you find all this? And I said, you know, God brought this to me. He did. He said, look here, look there, look here, look there. And I did. And the more I looked, the more we found and the more we realized. And we just want to thank everybody for their support, and please have an open mind, and please go to the straw and, you know, share it. And just know that, Dakota and Gage didn't do this, and you know, if they had have and they'd seen these girls, they would have stopped and helped. And I hope everybody knows that, because we know that. We know that. And again, thank you so much.
Kathy, thank you so much. And we're going to have you back on as soon as possible. And please, listeners, go to the Facebook page, The Straw That Broke, or hashtag The Straw That Broke Truth. Is that correct? Or the Schreiber Brothers Truth?
It's that, yes, hashtag Schreiber Brothers Truth.
S-H-R-I-V-E-R Brothers Truth. And
yes,
listeners, this went by just so too quick, but I want to thank you very much for tuning in, for taking an interest in this and what we bring to you on TS Radio Network. Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told, and Stephen Burke's KLRB 89.9 FM Lighthouse Radio out of Stuart, Oklahoma. And we've got a lot more coming to you, and watch out, Wakuma. I hope I'm saying that right. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and
thank you.
And we will we'll talk to you next Sunday. God bless everybody, and thank you, Kathy, and good night.
God bless you. Thank you. Good night.